Imagine being asked to come up with the Bible's greatest hits. What would make your list? Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden? Noah's Ark? The Ten Commandments? I mean, they were so big they got their own movie. How about that Bible verse that's seen at most televised sporting events? John 3:16, the verse that begins with, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only Son." What else? Well, of course, the nativity stories with their angels and their shepherds and wise men. Miracles like water into wine, walking on the water. The unique world-changing story of the resurrection, obviously. And without question, something on just about everyone's list would be that well-known and beloved passage from the book of Psalms, the 23rd Psalm to be precise. I mean, the Psalm is so familiar to so many that commenting on it may seem unnecessary. On the other hand, its very familiarity invites the attempt to hear it in a fresh way. Psalm 23 has become a unifying expression of collective sorrow and hope. A Bible scholar says that its popularity, even beyond religious settings, has made that psalm what he calls an American secular icon. President George W. Bush quoted Psalm 23 when he addressed the nation on September 11th, 2001. It was included in the public memorial service for pop star Whitney Houston. Portions of the 23rd Psalm have been quoted in songs by artists ranging from Duke Ellington to Pink Floyd, and have been quoted in movies as diverse as Pale Rider and Full Metal Jacket and Titanic. Rabbi and author Harold Kushner has suggested that Psalm 23 speaks to people regardless of their faith tradition, and even to those who claim to have no religious allegiance. The 23rd Psalm elicits strong associations, quite different associations, actually. For many Christians, it was the first psalm they ever committed to memory. Probably the only psalm one committed to memory. Just hearing those words can transport us back to the Sunday school classrooms of our childhood with those little tiny chairs and tables and the aroma of glue and paste, those little offering envelopes. On the other hand, hearing spoken that familiar phrase, "The Lord is my shepherd," well, that can also take our thoughts immediately to remembering the funeral of a beloved relative or a dear friend. I was surprised to learn that it's only been in the last 100 years or so that the 23rd Psalm was commonly used in memorial services, just in the last 100 years or so. Now, how did that association happen, that association between funerals and Psalm 23? Well, the King James Version's familiar English translation of the psalm includes this phrase, "the valley of the shadow of death." And apparently, the modern mind hears that poetic expression, "the valley of the shadow of death," and we took it literally, assuming that it was a reference to death. But actually, Bible scholars today believe that the original Hebrew text is a poetic expression for profound darkness, profound lostness. Not merely being caught in a spiritual or emotional shadow, but being mired in a shadow seemingly as deep and as inescapable as if the shadow were cast by death itself. And many conditions in life can have that effect on us. Profound loneliness, depression, chronic illness, grief, a sense of hopelessness. They all can evoke a feeling that one is in a valley of deep darkness, or the darkest valley, as that verse is translated today. Now, when we hear this shepherd's psalm, we may be inclined to imagine that it refers to Jesus. And while the New Testament does depict Jesus as a good shepherd, Psalm 23 was written hundreds of years before God's incarnation in Jesus Christ. And so this psalm was not written about Jesus. It's intended to evoke a metaphorical image of God. An overview of the psalm reveals that in the first part, the writer describes God as being like a shepherd to sheep, and in the second part of the psalm, God is described as being like a host to guests. Let's look at both themes briefly. First, God cares for the psalm writer's needs like a shepherd cares for the flock. The psalm mentions green pastures. And if you've visited the Holy Land with me, I think you'll agree that what they might think of as green pastures is nothing like the verdant hills of, say, Amish country down in Holmes County. In most places in the Holy Land, flocks have to graze large areas foraging for scrub vegetation. I mean, I suppose there are some areas that are a bit more green than others. Maybe that's this ideal that the psalmist envisions. And the shepherd leads the sheep beside still waters. So I read that it's not true that sheep will only drink from still standing water. Common myth, but it's not true. They will drink from a gently flowing stream, but I understand that they have a well-founded instinctive fear of falling into a stream because their water-saturated wool would become so heavy that they wouldn't be able to climb back out on the riverbank. And as a matter of fact, recently I saw on YouTube a video showing how hard a man over in Wales worked to get a waterlogged sheep out of the water and onto the shore. You can, Oh, Sheep Rescue in Wales. Just search Sheep Rescue in Wales and you'll be able to, not now. Sheep Rescue in Wales, and you'll be able to watch that video. I mean, he was really working. So now we can understand why a shepherd leads the sheep beside, up to the still waters. I've already talked about the darkest valley. Then the text mentions a rod and a staff. Now those are two objects carried by the shepherd, a rod or a club to defend against wild animals, and a staff or a long pole to guide and control the sheep. A shepherd probably also would have had a sling or a slingshot. The psalmist feels secure because the shepherd is prepared to care for him. And by the way, we tend to picture shepherds as men and boys, since the Bible presents us with figures like Abraham, David, serving as shepherds. But studies have revealed that shepherding was done by girls and young women as well as boys and men. Matter of fact, if you read the Old Testament, Rachel, who later became Jacob's wife, and Zipporah, who later became the wife to Moses, they are two biblical examples of young women who are skilled shepherds. So what about that metaphor in the second half of the psalm, the metaphor of God as a host? The host does just what the shepherd does, provides food, drink, shelter, protection. But notice that the psalm shifts from the third to the second person in the second part of the psalm. Not the Lord He, but you prepare a table. You anoint my head. That just serves to increase our intimacy with God. And despite this psalm seeming to be about the individual, you know, I walk through the valley, He makes me lie down, my cup overflows. Despite what it seems like a focus on the individual, notice that it ends with a reference to the house of the Lord. And as we hear this psalm today, in this house of the Lord, the psalm reminds us that each individual is part of a community putting our trust in God. Well, that's a little insight into the structure and the content of this familiar song. So what might we take away from it besides the comfort of familiarity? Someone has suggested that we can't see God as shepherd if we also don't see ourselves as sheep. When we open our eyes to how much we rely on God for everything, the more we realize God's provision in our lives. So growing our faith is more than simply a matter of learning to trust that God will give us this day our daily bread. Our faith is built on more than receiving the stuff we need. Our faith is built on relationship. For you are with me, the psalm says. Despite the fact that some of you skipped over that, you thought it was a headline, but that is the central verse of the psalm. For you are with me. You, God, are with us. Yes, you are with us in our daily activities of eating and sleeping, and you are with us when we feel surrounded by the deepest darkness that the pains and struggles of life can inflict upon us. You stand by us when competitors seek to undermine us, when our hopeful resilience is weakened, when our trust in ourselves and our trust in others has been damaged. For you are with us when prospects for prosperity and peace are threatened. For you are with us even when we forget you're there. When we forget you're here. Before us, behind us, beside us, above us, within us. That's what we declare when we embrace the 23rd Psalm. For you are with me, Lord. Psalm 23 asserts the unshakable truth that God is with us. God is with us. There's a Hebrew word that means just that. That means God is with us. And you know that word. The Hebrew word is Emmanuel. God is with us. God chose to make the truth of Emmanuel real for us when God came among us, being born into the tangible physicality of our world in Jesus, God's Son. In Jesus, God entered our world and entered our lives to embody that relationship, that presence with us. God goes with us even in the shadowy valleys. The Lord is not just a good shepherd. Each one of us can believe that the Lord is my shepherd, who is and always will be with us. Amen.